Ever heard that saying, possession is nine-tenths of the law? Well, today we're diving deep into a case where that saying, you know, gets put to the test with a Porsche.
Yeah, a fascinating case, really. You know, it shows how easily a straightforward transaction, buying a car, you know, can turn into a legal nightmare, especially when you're dealing with security interests and titles.
Right. So we're talking about BMW Financial Services versus Felice. Mm-hmm. To set the stage, we have a Porsche. We've got a duplicate title and a whole lot of legal drama.
Yeah, and it all revolves around this concept of a, you know, perfected security interest. When someone takes out a loan to buy a car, the lender wants to make sure that they have a legal claim to that vehicle, you know, just in case the borrower defaults on the loan, and that's where the security interest comes in.
So it's like the lender saying, hey, I helped you buy this car, so I have a stake in it too, right?
Exactly. And to make sure that that claim is legally enforceable, the lender needs to perfect their security interest. In most states, including Illinois, where this case took place, that means getting their land recorded on the vehicle's title.
Okay, so in this case, BMW Financial Services, the lender, did everything right. They secured their interest, got their name on the original title, nice and official.
Precisely. But here's where things get interesting. The borrower, in this case, Bruce Grant, he managed to get a duplicate title for the Porsche.
Sounds innocent enough.
Yeah.
What's the big deal with a duplicate title?
Well, on this duplicate title, there was no mention of BMW's land. It was clean, as if the car had never been financed.
Wait, so how is that even possible? Did someone just, like, forget to include it?
Well, not quite. It turned out that Grant had obtained this duplicate title fraudulently. He made it appear as if the car was, you know, free and clear of any liens.
Oh, wow.
This allowed him to sell the Porsche to a used car dealership called Auto Showcase without raising any red flags.
So Auto Showcase buys this seemingly clean Porsche from Grant, and then they sell it to, you know, an unsuspecting customer named Richard Felice. And then, enter stage left, BMW Financial Services, who eventually discovers this whole scheme, and they realize that their Porsche has basically vanished into this used car market.
Right. And this is where the legal battle really heats up. BMW wants their Porsche back, but they're now facing a situation where the car has changed hands multiple times, and everyone involved is claiming they were innocent and had no idea about this original lien.
So it's like a classic case of who's left holding the bag.
Yeah.
Does that duplicate title completely wipe out BMW's claim to the car?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? To understand the court's decision, we need to dive a bit deeper into this idea of constructive notice.
Okay, let's unpack that a little bit. What is constructive notice and why does it matter in this case?
So constructive notice is a legal concept, and it basically says if you have reason to know something, you can't claim ignorance later on. Think of it like this. You're walking down the street and you see a sign that says, beware of dog. Right. If you ignore that sign and you get bitten, you can't really argue that you had no idea there was a dog.
Right. Right.
Even if you didn't actually know about the dog, you should have known because that sign was right there.
Yeah, you had the means to find out.
Exactly. And in this case, the duplicate title, even though it looked clean, it did have a tiny little disclaimer stating that it may be subject to rights under the original certificate.
It's like a little legal Easter egg hidden on the title.
Right. And that disclaimer serves as constructive notice. It's basically saying, hey, there might be more to this car's history than meets the eye. Don't just assume everything is perfect.
So even though that duplicate title looked clean, Auto Showcase should have dug a little deeper, right? They should have investigated further because they had that little warning sign right there in front of them.
Absolutely. And that detail ended up being crucial in the court's decision.
So we've got a fraudulent duplicate title. We've got a disclaimer that acts as constructive notice and a lender who is suddenly realizing that their Porsche has gone AWOL. This is getting really interesting. So the big question is, who wins?
Well, that's what we'll delve into next. The court's decision in this case highlights some fascinating aspects of the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, and how it impacts both lenders and buyers in these kinds of scenarios.
I can't wait to hear more about this. Our listeners are definitely in for a wild ride.
Welcome back. So before we were talking about that little disclaimer on the duplicate title and how it served as constructive notice.
Right, that may be subject to rights under the original certificate warning. It seemed like such a small detail, but it played a big role in how the court decided the case.
It did, yeah. The court ultimately sided with BMW. They found that the original security interest remained valid and enforceable, even with the fraudulent duplicate title.
So a fraudulent title doesn't automatically mean that the lender loses their claim to the car.
Exactly. And a big part of the court's reasoning rested on the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, you know, which provides a framework for secured transactions just like this one.
Okay, so let's talk about the UCC. I know it's a big deal in the legal world, but it can be kind of intimidating, you know, for those who aren't lawyers. Can you break it down for us a little bit?
Absolutely. The UCC is essentially a set of rules. You know, it governs commercial transactions, including the sale of goods and the creation and enforcement of security interests. You can think of it like a rule book for the marketplace, you know, ensuring that everyone plays fair and knows what to expect.
So in this case, how did the UCC come into play?
Well, one of the key arguments that was made by Auto Showcase, the dealership that bought the Porsche from Grant, was that they were a buyer in the ordinary course of business.
That sounds like a pretty strong argument. If they're in the business of buying and selling cars, shouldn't they have some protection under the UCC?
You would think so, right. And that's exactly what Auto Showcase was hoping for. There's a specific provision in the UCC that offers certain protections to buyers who purchase goods in the ordinary course of business from a merchant who deals in those types of goods.
So it's like saying if you buy a TV from a store that sells TVs, you know, you have certain assurances under the law.
Exactly, exactly. But here's the catch. The court pointed out that Auto Showcase didn't buy the Porsche from a dealership. They bought it from Grant, who was a private seller.
Ah, so that distinction is really crucial. The buyer in the ordinary course protection only applies if you're buying from a dealer who regularly sells those types of goods as part of their business.
Exactly. And that's why Auto Showcase's argument didn't hold water in this case. They weren't buying a Porsche from a Porsche dealership in the normal course of business.
Interesting. So even though Auto Showcase might have thought they were protected under the UCC, the specific circumstances of that transaction meant that that protection just didn't apply.
Right. It highlights how important it is to understand the nuances of the UCC and how those provisions can be interpreted in different situations.
That makes sense. So what other arguments did Auto Showcase make to try to defend their position?
Well, they also tried to argue that errors in the state's records should protect them. They pointed to a section of the UCC that deals with situations where a security interest is perfected in another state, but it doesn't show up in the local records.
So their reasoning was like, hey, the state records show a clean title, so it's not our fault we didn't know about BMW's lien.
Right.
Clever argument, but I'm guessing the court wasn't convinced.
You're right. The court pointed out that that particular provision of the UCC only applies to situations where the security interest was perfected in a different state, not the same state where the transaction took place. And in this case, you know, BMW had followed all the rules in Illinois, so Auto Showcase couldn't rely on this errors in public records defense.
So strike two for Auto Showcase. Did they have any other legal arguments up their sleeve?
Well, they did. They also tried to argue that enforcing BMW's lien would be unfair and unjust.
Right.
They were basically saying, look, we were victims of fraud, too. We didn't know about this lien, and we shouldn't be punished for something that wasn't our fault.
Yeah, it does seem like a tough situation for Auto Showcase, right? They were misled by the fraudulent title, just like the eventual buyer of the Porsche.
Absolutely. It's a classic example of how fraud can create this ripple effect impacting, you know, multiple parties.
Right.
But the court's response to this argument was essentially, look, BMW didn't do anything wrong. They followed the rules, perfected their security interest, and were completely innocent in this whole scheme.
So the court was basically saying you can't punish the victim of fraud to try to make things fair for someone else who was also misled.
Exactly. The legal system is designed to uphold established rules, you know, and protect those who act in good faith, even if it means that others who were also caught in the crossfire might experience, you know, some negative consequences.
It's a tough lesson, but an important one. So what's the big takeaway for our listeners?
Well, I think the key lesson here is that due diligence is absolutely crucial, especially when you're dealing with used vehicles. You know, don't just rely on what you see on the title or what the seller tells you. Dig deeper, you know, investigate the car's history. And if something seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, this case really drives home the point that buying a used car isn't as simple as handing over some cash and driving off into the sunset, right?
Right.
There's a whole legal backdrop we need to be aware of.
Absolutely. And it's not just about protecting yourself from, you know, potential fraud, but it's also about understanding your rights and responsibilities under the law. For instance, if you're the one selling a used car, you need to make sure that you're disclosing, you know, all the relevant information about the vehicle's history, including any lights or encumbrances.
Right. So no hiding any, you know, surprise lights or hoping that the buyer won't notice that little disclaimer on the title. Transparency is key.
Exactly. And if you're a lender, this case really highlights the importance of, being meticulous when you're perfecting your security interest. Make sure all that paperwork is in order. Dot your I's, cross your T's,
It's a good reminder that those legal steps, even if they seem like tedious, they're there for a reason, right? They can save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Right. So, before we wrap up, I want to throw out kind of a hypothetical question to our listeners. Let's imagine, just for a moment, that Auto Showcase had bought the Porsche from a dealership, not from Grant directly. Would the outcome have been different?
That's a fascinating thought. We talked earlier about the buyer in the ordinary course protection under the UCC. It seems like that might have applied in this scenario.
Yeah, it's possible. If Auto Showcase had purchased that Porsche from a dealership that regularly sells Porsches as part of their normal business operations, they might have been shielded from BMW's claim.
So even though there was this fraudulent title, floating around, the fact that they bought the car from a legitimate dealer might have tipped the scales in their favor.
Potentially, but there are still some, nuances we'd need to consider. For example, we need to know whether the dealership was aware of, BMW's prior lien when they sold the car to Auto Showcase.
Right. If the dealership knew about the lien and didn't disclose it, that would be a whole other level of legal messiness.
Exactly. And that's what makes these cases so interesting. They force us to think critically about the different layers of the law and how all these various factors can really impact the outcome.
It's like a legal puzzle, with each piece adding a new twist to the story. Well, I think we've given our listeners plenty to ponder today.
Yeah.
Any final words of wisdom before we wrap up this deep dive into the world of fraudulent titles, security interests, and the ever-fascinating Uniform Commercial Code?
Well, I would just encourage everyone to, stay curious and informed. The legal landscape is constantly evolving, and cases like this one remind us that even seemingly, simple transactions can have really complex legal implications.
Great advice. And for our listeners, if this episode has sparked your interest in learning more about the UCC and other legal concepts, be sure to check out our archives. We've got a whole library of deep dives waiting for you.
We do indeed. And who knows, maybe our next deep dive will feature, a case involving a yacht, a disputed trademark, and a whole, barrel of monkeys.
Now that's an episode I wouldn't want to miss. Thanks for joining us, and remember, knowledge is power, especially in the legal arena. Stay curious, and we'll see you next time on the Deep Dive.